Hey everybody, movie retrospective time. Doing some M. Night Shyamalan twist ending action. That's what we're talking about today.
Yeah, this guy here, man. You know the deal. You don't know what to expect with a dude because he's kind of extreme. You're either going to like his shit or you're not. And like, I really loved his superhero movies. I liked a couple of his horror movies. And I liked this one. It was pretty good. I liked it. I thought it was better than Signs.
Honestly, yeah. I mean, and I know that maybe that's, I don't, is that an unpopular opinion? Because I kind of feel like Signs is pretty well regarded, maybe more than this one. But honestly, I think this movie is more enjoyable to watch than Signs. I don't know why. It's like, I guess because I'm not like a big alien, you know, movies about aliens.
It's
I'm not really.
It's not perfect. It's got some weaknesses. I mean.
Like all of his movies do.
Some of the dialogue's too lengthy. A bunch of stuff that you don't really need. It's more like in certain spots, it's more like a stage play than it is a movie. You know what I mean? It's telling and not showing. But it does do some cool shit. And it reminded me a lot of Midsommar in some ways. It felt like a Midsommar, like about a cult. That's what it felt like.
But yeah, I guess a little bit, yeah. I kind of feel like maybe the Robert Eggers movie, The Witch, it kind of has a similar vibe to this. Yeah. Even though that was more straight up a horror movie. But yeah, so we're talking about The Village, which you had never seen this.
No.
And somehow, even though it came out in 2004, you did not know what the twist was. Mm. So I actually saw this in the theater back in 2004. And I remember thinking it was like, okay, I didn't love it, but I thought it was like pretty good. But then in subsequent years, I didn't see it. And then like I kept sort of hearing a lot of people shitting on it. And then I was like, yeah, maybe it did kind of suck. And like, I remember it being okay. Like I said, I didn't think it was great, but I thought it was like pretty good. But I was like interested to watch it again, knowing what the twist was, to see if it sort of like recontextualizes it, which it kind of does, I have to say.
Got Sigourney Weaver in it. Got the dude from Predators. What's that guy's name?
Adrian Brody.
See, she knows. He's got that Adrian dude in it. It's got, who else is in this thing? It's even
Joaquin
got
Phoenix.
Got
is
Joaquin
in it.
Phoenix is in it. It's got
William Hurt is in it.
It's got the dude from the Kung Fu movie that I like.
I totally forgot that Jesse Eisenberg has a very, very small part in this.
Some people don't like Eisenberg. I think Eisenberg's a fucking genius. The two Vivarium and Art of Self Defense, I think they're masterpieces. Just love them.
But I had totally forgotten. Well, I guess in 2004, like, Jesse Eisenberg wasn't, like, super, super on the radar. Like, because I know that he'd been in The Social Network, but I think that came out after that. So, but it was funny to see him because I'm like, hey, that's Jesse Eisenberg.
Yeah, it's a bit part, but he's in it.
Yeah, he barely has any lines.
There's a lot
he's
of people,
just, like, a guy in the village.
There's a lot of people you recognize, and you probably don't know their names.
But, yeah, so I kind of feel like, I mean, obviously, I feel like even people that haven't seen this movie probably know what the twist is.
Got so Bonnie Howard's daughter in it too.
Yeah, she's kind of the starring. But yeah, this is her first movie. Actually,
yeah, she's good in it.
She's actually really good in it. I think she's kind of one of the best things about it. Yeah. But yeah, so like I said, it was interesting watching it again, knowing what the twist was. Like I said, we're gonna spoil it. So if you somehow avoided, like Tom somehow did, avoided knowing what the twist was.
Uh-huh.
The thing about this that I think I kind of was more into this time is that. The problem, I think, with the twist is that if you think about it in real-life terms, it's not super plausible.
No.
I mean, the way that it's... And there's, like, a lot of plot holes and stuff, but I kind of feel like maybe this is just an excuse. I don't know. And I kind of feel like this is maybe something that M. Night says a lot about his own stuff. I kind of feel like you have to go into this movie and approach it like an allegory or like a fairy tale... rather than getting all, like, logically, because there's a lot of really, really big plot holes in this. And like I said, if you think about the way that the twist, like, everything that would have to happen for that twist to
be plausible,
I just don't see, I'm not saying it's impossible, I'm just saying that it's really, really implausible.
You know, it might have seemed possible at the time that he thought this up. As long as you didn't think about it too much. There are certain places in the United States where you don't have that many planes flying over, but planes are going to fly over this bitch.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter where you are.
True.
And it doesn't matter how big the wildlife reserve. All right. It's taking place in basically like a cult that lives in a real enclosed encampment, and it's like the 1800s.
It's supposed to be 1897.
It's supposed to be 1897.
It says on the gravestone.
And all the everybody pretty much there except some of the elders and the kids think that it is 1897. It isn't, though. It's modern time. And it's a cult that's trying to withdraw from the fucking crime and the kind of like the tragedies of modern life. They were all victims of some kind of crime.
Yeah, that's where they all met each other, right. Like in a victim-survivor group. Right. And then they all got together and said, hey, let's... You know, William Hurt's character, he's like the elder.
Yeah.
And the implication being, I don't know if they super, super go into this, but he's kind of like, I guess his grandfather had a shit ton of money.
Yeah.
And had this piece of land that right. was big enough and kind of remote enough that they could kind of close it off.
Yeah, so they build this 1800s town, and they only bring in 1800s stuff. And they had kids there. And the kids don't know that it's... They don't know that it's not the 1800s. And on the outside of it, they have a whole security company... with a cover story that's trying to protect it, what they think is a wildlife preserve.
Yeah.
But that's not what it is. It's a cult. And they don't know. They don't know what's in there, which is not that plausible. A lot of stuff isn't plausible about it in the long terms. Now, if the elders were taking a more of a active role in dealing with the security people in the outside world, I would then believe it. But they seemed to be like... sequestered in there too, like they weren't going out. You know what I mean? Like they could have easily gone out and gotten supplies, like medical supplies, and come back
and made
a story about
that. To me is kind of like the biggest plot hole.
That's the easiest way to do it.
Well, that's what I'm saying about how I think that you need to approach this movie, because like I said, there's a lot of really cool shit about this movie. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think that it got kind of like mixed reviews mm-hmm. at the time. Like it made a lot of money.
It's aged well.
Like it was successful. But I think a lot of the criticism of it at the time was like, well, there's all these big plot holes. Like the biggest plot hole being, well, why send the blind girl, right. Ivy, out into the modern world to get medicine when one of the elders could just sneak out
yeah.
and go and like...
And no one would know.
And because it seems like the only reason that was like preventing them from doing that was the, like all the elders, we made a pact that we were never going to leave. And I'm like, yeah, but... If your kid's gonna die,
right,
well, at the very beginning, one of the elders' kid does die.
Yeah.
And the implication being that if they'd had modern medicine, the kid would still be alive.
Yeah.
So, and it's also implied, I don't think they say this outright, but it's also implied that Ivy's blindness could have also possibly been prevented
yeah.
by modern medicine, as could Noah, Adrian Brody's character, as could his mental impairment.
Yeah.
So there, the thing about it though, like I said, that makes me want to say that it's more like an allegory or something like that, is that basically what this movie is saying is it worth it? Like just because you can't escape sorrow, you can't right. escape bad shit happening to you in the world. And it's like them, actually, they had all this like crime and shit like that happen to them. Like all their, you know, each one of the elders had one of their relatives like in the real world in Philadelphia, I'm presuming, because that's where all his stories are set. This like were victims of crimes and were killed, and so they just said, "Fuck this world. We're just gonna go in this place and we're gonna act like it's, you know, Little House on the Prairie times, and you know, and everything will be fine, and all of our children will be safe." But that's not how shit works out, because obviously, like I said, their kids died of preventable shit, and then Noah ends up, like, committing a crime out of jealousy,
yeah.
which, you know, is something that, like I said, they thought they were going to avoid. So I think kind of the whole point of the movie, and we haven't even got into the fact that the elders are straight up lying to their children, saying, yeah. well, you can't ever leave because there's monsters in the woods.
Yeah.
Which was another twist, the monsters were not real.
Yeah, they dressed up like monsters, though.
Yeah, I mean, and actually yeah. the costumes were pretty cool, I gotta
yeah.
say. But so these kids have grown up with an illusion their entire lives.
Yeah, trying to protect them and shit.
And
to protect innocence. That's what they were trying
yeah,
to
do. Yeah, and like, I get that. Like, I get, and a lot of parents have that. But I think the whole point of the story was that you can't really do that. You know what I'm saying?
Not long term.
Not long term. Even though at the end of the movie... it is implied that they intend to stay there and continue the lie. Because Ivy goes out and gets the medicine, but she's blind. She can't see. She didn't see the road. She didn't see the car. She just heard the dude's voice, and he gave her the medicine, and she went back to the village. not really being any the wiser. And she also didn't know that the quote-unquote monster that she killed in the woods was Noah in a costume.
Yeah.
Even though she did know that the monsters weren't real. But then, see, that's another thing that I kind of feel like, and some people have pointed out, even people that are defending the movie, they said what M. Night should have done, maybe, was made it so that, because they said it's really weird how the scene where Ivy is being stalked by Noah, who she doesn't know is Noah, in the monster costume in the woods, that it's like that would have been more impactful for the audience had we not already been informed that the monsters were not real.
Yeah.
And the thing about it, too, was that she knew that the monsters weren't real, but then William Hurt's character, her dad, like, gave an out, like, oh, well, we based the monsters on legends about monsters in the woods. So there was still, like, some plausible deniability. Oh, well, maybe there were really monsters out there, even though most of them were fake. But, so I guess that's what she thought. But I think it would have been more impactful if they'd have just switched that scene to, like, late to earlier, like, yeah, before you knew that the monsters were not real. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, it didn't matter. It wouldn't have improved the movie that much. I mean, it was a good movie. But you know what I mean? I don't think it would have changed it that much. Maybe.
I think that what happened with this movie, and I experienced this as well, because, like I said, I saw this in the theater. You know, obviously, M. Night came out with The Sixth Sense, which was like a monster fucking hit. It made like $700 bajillion, you know, on a very, very modest budget. And that's still a great movie. That's still, you know, that still holds up. And then, like, he made, you know, Signs and Unbreakable, which didn't make quite as much money, but were still, like, pretty critically, you know, an audience successful with audiences.
There was a whole Unbreakable trilogy there.
Yeah, I know, but I'm talking about prior to this movie coming out.
Okay, yeah.
So I kind of feel like up until that point, you know, even though he made The Sixth Sense and that was amazing, and then the other movies, people are like, well, it's not quite as good as The Sixth Sense, but it's still pretty awesome. This movie seemed to be the turning point where M. Night started to become like on like a downward slide. You know what I'm saying? Because I kind of feel like people saw this. The problem is, and we've talked about this before, and I think we talked about this when we were talking about The Sixth Sense, is that he came to be known as the twist guy.
The twist guy.
So now it's kind of like you can't even, and that's what I mean when I say I think it was actually better for me to watch The Village a second time knowing what the twist was, so you could actually appreciate the movie without sitting there trying to figure out what the twist is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I think that's better to like do, and that's why I liked watching The Sixth Sense a second time too, because knowing what the twist is, you can actually appreciate it a lot more because you can see how it was all constructed, you know. And I think the same thing was true here. But the thing about it, so this came out, another thing that's interesting too, and I saw another critic point this out, was that up to this point in his career, M. Night had always made movies that were very much grounded in the real world, but then introduced a supernatural element, usually as the twist.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, Bruce Willis was dead the whole time, or,
right,
you know, whatever, Bruce Willis was a superhero, or whatever. So he introduces supernatural elements. This one inverted that to the sense where they set it up like it was supernatural, like a monster movie, but then it was like Scooby-Doo ending. It was like they weren't real. Oh, and also, it's the modern day, and it's not 1897. You know what I mean? So it was like two twists. So it was kind of interesting how he tried to invert it. And I think at the time it didn't really work. And I think one of the problems too, and I think even M. Night brought this up, is that because prior to this he'd always kind of done horror or sci-fi type movies, this was absolutely marketed as a horror film.
Yeah, and it's not quite a horror
movie. And it's not really. And I remember the trailers being like, oh man, that looks really cool. Because the whole setup was like, there was this creepy village and it was like in the middle of nowhere and there's all these monsters in the woods. And there was like, in the trailers, like all the, you know, you get glimpses of the thing with like the red cloak on and like all the people with yellow cloaks. And I'm like, man, that looks pretty cool. And it looks pretty creepy. And like the first part of it is creepy, but you have to approach it. It's not a horror movie. Not really.
Not really.
It's honestly kind of like a love story or kind of like a drama, but
yeah, it needed a bigger horror element probably. I mean, the tone, it reminded me a lot of Wicker Man and Midsommar, but without the folk horror part.
Yeah.
More like folk religion. It felt like a cult
movie. Weird thing is that they weren't really religious.
No. Well, it's a religion. It's like a secular religion.
Yeah.
Their religion was to protect innocence and to keep the fucking cult together, you know. Some people have, you know what I mean? Some people say, well, if it doesn't have this in it, it's not a religion. Religions don't have to have gods in them. A lot of religions don't have gods in them. And it's like that. It's like a cult. It's like a cult religion. And it's almost kind of like worshiping the past, the 1800s.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. It's almost kind of like... But that's another thing, too, is that... And something that you sort of pointed out when we were watching the movie is that, well... You know, there are communities that do this, like the Amish and stuff.
Yeah, it's like the Amish. Right?
But they don't raise their children to pretend like it's 1897 and come up with all of these. They do kind of come up with, if you go to the city.
Well,
but they might come up with some kind of shit where everything out there is dangerous.
Yeah.
In a way, they do that.
In a way, though, they are LARPing that it's the 1800s.
That's true.
You can't have anything that's high tech. You got to go out there and milk cows. You got to fucking make cheese. No technology. You can't have a car. Now, they're not saying cars don't exist. That's the distinction I was making.
It's
not part of their world. They're not hiring a car.
They're not lying to their children and saying none of that even is out there.
It's basically what the Amish are doing. It's just that they just added a new veil of kind of religiosity over it. They're not even going to have it at all. Like, it's just not out there. You know, that it is the 1800s. That's just kind of what they did. Forward.
And like I said, I've kind of brought this up before, but it's like, you know, going back to 1897 is absolutely not going to solve any of your problems, because holy shit. And like I said, I kind of like that the first shot of the film, which is one of the elders crying over the coffin of his dead son, who could have been saved if they had medicine, if they weren't so fucking dead set on going out to those wicked towns and like getting some goddamn... And honestly, that's another thing that only just occurred to me. They didn't even have to go to the towns. She went to the ranger station and they had medicine there.
Yeah.
So it's like they wouldn't even have to go that far. No. You could just go through the woods. So they don't have to even go and associate. If the elders were so afraid of, you know, well, we can't go to the towns because we'll get raped and murdered, which is, you know, unlikely. But you wouldn't even have to go that far. You just had to go to the ranger station and get medicine. That's all you had to do.
Why 1890s? The 1890s was not a peaceful time.
I mean, I guess that was just like an arbitrary kind of thing. Well, and some people have pointed out too, and like I said, you could find logical inconsistencies all day long. It's like if the kids that grew up there didn't know any better, why would you have to talk like that?
Right.
But the thing about it, and I think one of the main criticisms is that M. Night does things for the sake of the audience that in the movie world, the characters would not do.
Right.
Another logical inconsistency I pointed out, I absolutely did not notice this the first time. Well, obviously I didn't notice it the first time because I didn't know what the twist was, but now I do. So Sigourney Weaver was one of the elders. Absolutely. She had the black box in her house that had all the stuff, and she said that her husband, because she was a widow, right? Her husband got robbed and like mugged and killed and left in the East River. So she was one of the elders. So you would think, I mean, if she's one of the elders, then she met them in the grief group. So she would know about the fake monsters, right? Yeah. You would imagine.
Yeah.
But there's one scene between her and William Hurt where, like, after all the animals turned up skinned, and she says, you know, and the red marks are on the doors. She says, yeah, those red marks, that's too high up for a coyote.
Yeah.
Why are those two saying that to each other? Because presumably they both know that the monsters are fake.
It's just they're putting on a show for the kids.
Yeah, but nobody else was there.
Oh, I don't know.
It was the two of them. Yeah, that's what I mean. So I think that's what a lot of people kind of take issue with M. Night's movies, is that he does things for the benefit of the audience.
Yeah.
That in the movie, if that movie was a real world, that wouldn't happen. That conversation wouldn't have occurred.
I understand. You're being logical and reasonable.
Yeah. No,
but
I'm just saying.
This is its art. That's what I'm arguing.
Yeah. I'm just saying that if you come at it from that point of view, you can find all kind of shit wrong with it. But honestly, watching it, you know, even though from a realistic, logical point of view, it doesn't really make a lot of sense, but as a sort of allegory about innocence and about trading in, it's kind of like a meditation on like fear and sort of like what are you willing to trade away for quote unquote security, yeah. even though you will never achieve it.
I like the movie.
Yeah, I do as well.
My problem with it was that it was a good movie, but it would have made a much better Twilight Zone episode.
Yes, many people have made the Twilight Zone.
Really?
It is a very Twilight Zone-y.
Yeah, because
it's contrived,
it
but like
to
I
be
said,
shorter and smaller.
Yeah.
If not, when it's at this length, it has to be filled out with a lot more stuff in it.
Yeah.
It was getting kind of the reveals were getting kind of slow. Like it's going well. What's the next step now? You know what I mean? You might have 10 minutes of damn dialogue happening, and you know you're being fooled to believe in a world that isn't real. I'm already calling bullshit on the 1890s thing, and it takes forever for the fucking twist to be revealed, and you know it's there.
Yeah, and like I said, I think that's why a lot of his movies suffer, and I think this was, even though this one got mixed reviews, like it got good reviews at the time, but some people were pointing out logical inconsistencies, and I think it suffered too because people were expecting it to be a horror film, because that's how they marketed it, and it's not really a horror film. It's more like a creepy drama love story type of thing with some kind of creepy horror-y elements, but not really, because it's all fake.
I give it a B minus. Now, you cut 20 minutes out of it, maybe 30 minutes, it'd probably go up to an A.
Like I said, I mean, there's a really lot that I like about this movie. I really like Bryce Dallas Howard in it. She's great. Joaquin Phoenix, he's great in everything. So all the acting is good. The visuals are beautiful. The movie looks spectacular. And I really, really like all of the, like, the color coding. Like, I like all the red being, like, the danger color, which is funny because this came out in 2004, so a lot of people kind of conflated it with, you know, the amber or the yellow being, like, the safe color and then the red being the danger color, like those, you know, Iraq War color-coded kind of things, which that you could see it like that because, like I said, this is a very much... It's almost kind of like you could say it's like an allegory for like security theater because the elders think they're going to like, we're going to get away from the real world. We're going to move to this like isolated little village where nobody's going to come in. Nobody's going to go out. And we're keeping everybody in here by saying there's monsters like out in the woods. So no one can leave. So it's that kind of thing. They're trying to scare everybody into like staying in there, but obviously, and it works for most people, but Joaquin Phoenix's character, you know, Bryce Dallas Howard's character, whose name is Ivy, by the way. You know, they, even though they grew up here, they are not really afraid. They're afraid of what's in the wood, but they're not so afraid that they're not curious and they want to like go out. And that's kind of like where the conflict starts. And Ivy ends up being like kind of like the bravest character. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Although I think it would have been better. I don't know. Like I said, I think it would have been better for them to reveal that the monsters were fake before she went out in the woods. Because what they did, like he told everything in sort of like a linear timeline, but then he was like, you know, she's there and her dad's going to tell her that the monsters are fake because she has to go out in the woods and he doesn't want her to be afraid, which fair enough. But he doesn't tell her that it's the modern world out there. But I don't know if that would make any sense to her, though, because it would be like out of context.
Now, earlier on in this review, you said that M. Night fucking went down on a downward slope. I'm going to have to disagree.
In public perception. Right. That's what I meant.
Yeah. Because he's ended up pretty strong, if you ask me, with that damn superhero trilogy.
Although,
I love those. I thought they were great.
Well, the thing about it, I'm talking about just in time. Like, this came out, and this kind of like I said, prior to this, most of his movies had made a lot of money. This made a lot of money.
Yeah.
Prior to this, most
he
of his
was
movies.
Was the hot flavor of the day for a while.
Yeah, and it's like, and they were critically well received too. This one kind of started getting mixed. And then the next one, Lady in the Water, everybody shit on that.
I heard it was bad, but I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen it either. Yeah. But I probably should before it's, but I just remember everybody shitting on it and saying this is the worst movie ever. Honestly, I think the movie of his that got the worst reviews was The Last Airbender, which I also haven't seen, but everybody just said that was a total fucking dumpster fire. But like I said, I haven't seen it, so I can't say.
Yeah.
And then he made The Happening, which is like a lot of people like it because it's unintentionally hilarious. But I don't think that anybody, like, seriously thinks it's a good movie. But then after that, he seemed to start coming back some. Like, he made The Visit. You know, he made Split, which was actually really well received.
Yeah.
So that was almost kind of like his comeback, I think. I feel like Split was maybe the comeback. Yeah. I can't remember if The Visit came out before or after. I heard that one was good, too. But like I said, after this one... like I said, I liked this movie, but I didn't like it enough to keep watching his movies. Because all the ones that were on the downward spiral, like Lady in the Water and stuff like that, I just didn't bother with them. But revisiting this one, like I said, if you haven't seen it in a long time, but you still know what the twist is, because like I said, I feel like everybody knows what the twist is, then maybe not as many as know what the Sixth Sense twist is. But if you watch it knowing what the twist is and not expecting it to be a horror movie... and just kind of approaching it like a fairy tale or an allegory, then I think it reads a lot better. Like, just try not to think too much about... like I said, try not to think about too much of the logic behind the situation where, you know, why do they still talk like that if their kids have never been to the outside world? You know, why couldn't one of the elders just have gone and got medicine? Why are they more willing to let their children die than just go to the damn ranger station, which is like right through the woods. It takes like a day and bring it back. That's what I'm saying. So it just wasn't enough. I kind of feel like I think it would have been a stronger story overall if he could have found a better reason for the elders not leaving.
Well, I think he just kind of showed the ridiculousness of it. You know what I mean?
Their denial
of reality so much that they're willing to, you know, fucking kill their kids over it. You know what I mean?
Maybe that could actually work because there are some people that are so up their own butts with like their religious kind of thing about. Where it's like they will absolutely not get like just regular ass medicine for their kids because they're so convinced that, you know, God's going to save them or whatever. So maybe you could argue that they're coming at it from that angle.
Yeah, that's what I mean? That's what I think it was.
Which, yeah, okay. I'll allow it.
It's a decent movie. I don't really have much more to say about it, but I will say this. His best work is, what is it, Shattered?
No, Split.
No.
Unbreakable.
Unbreakable.
Split.
And Glass. And those are the best ones.
Yeah, a lot of people really like those.
Those are his best ones.
I think I like the Sixth Sense best, but those ones are good too.
His take on superheroes I thought was fucking fantastic.
Well, it's original. I mean, he's got like some really good ideas, and honestly, his visual sense and his sense of like symbolism and stuff like that is really, really good. Yeah. Like the way the shots are framed in this movie, the symbolism that he uses, like a couple shots that he does in the village that I hadn't even realized until I watched it again. But there's a couple shots where, like, Joaquin Phoenix and Bryce Dallas Howard are just about to kiss. It's, like, their first kiss, and it's a big love story and everything like that. And it cuts away to, like, an empty rocking chair. And then later on, after Bryce Dallas Howard finds him stabbed, it also cuts to an empty rocking chair, symbolism being... you know, eventually one of them is going to die, like going to get old and die, and one will have to live without the other one. And I was just kind of like, holy shit, I never even like caught that the first time. Yeah. Like I said, it doesn't make any sense that there'd be like an empty rocking chair in the middle of a field like that. Yeah. But it's still, but like I said, he's a very symbolic filmmaker, an allegorical filmmaker. And I kind of feel like looking at the movie through that lens, instead of trying to be like, well, you know, that would never work in real life.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of willing to give him the benefit of the doubt on this one. Because like I said, I hadn't seen this since 2004. And watching it again, I was kind of like, man, that's actually a much better movie than I remembered. And it's interesting that I had read some other pieces, like in different magazines, like a Collider and some other places. And it seems like in the last few years, especially since Old came out, which was his newest movie, a lot of people have kind of been reassessing The Village. And they're kind of saying, yeah, it's like we saw this at the time and it pissed us off because we were expecting a horror movie and we were like, oh, the twist was dumb and all this other kind of stuff. But they're like rewatching it. They're like, actually, it's pretty fucking good. you know what I mean? So people are kind of like critically reassessing it. Like I said, it was kind of like the marketing too that kind of got in trouble.
So it was Unbreakable, Split, and Glass, right?
Yeah.
All right. Now here's something else I want to bring up with you guys. There's a possibility. I was overanalyzing it. There's a possibility that the Sixth Sense might also be in that same universe. Because, you know, being able to interact with the dead, that's a superpower too, in a way. That's like something Doctor Strange or Mephisto or some shit like that. You know, you that might, because you know, superpowers were also kind of like abilities. So, for all we know, the kid from The Sixth Sense might be in that universe, huh?
Yeah.
It could be.
He does that a lot because somebody pointed out to me, like in, or pointed out, like in one of their reviews of The Village, that the character at the end, because you know how M. Night like shows up in a lot of his own movies?
Yeah.
He shows up in this, but you only see in The Village, but you can only see like the back of his head. And his character's name, like, he's the guy that kind of, like, runs the security detail around the shit. And he knows about the people in there, but he's not supposed to tell anybody. His character's name is Jay, and he plays a character named Jay in that trilogy. Okay. So we're wondering if that's, like, if he's, like, the same repeating character. So, like, all his movies are technically in the same universe.
Yeah.
I guess I could see that. Because, like I said, this is... You know, even though this seems like a period piece, it's totally not. It's set around the same time period. And it's set in the same area because it's set in Pennsylvania. They do say that it's Pennsylvania because all his shit's in Philadelphia because that's where he's from. Yeah. But yeah, so, but yeah, I had that pointed out to me too, that it's like, that that character was the same.
It might be the same universe.
Yeah. Well, it totally could be.
Yeah.
I mean, this one...
Which that might mean that Signs might be in the same universe.
Let's just make all...
They're all in the same universe.
M. Nightiverse.
It's the M. Nightiverse.
the extended thing. But yeah, so The Village is on Hulu right now. If you haven't seen it, then sorry, we just spoiled pretty much the whole movie for you. But like I said, I kind of feel like it's this, maybe not as widespread as The Sixth Sense, because I feel like even everyone's grandma that didn't even see The Sixth Sense knows what the fucking twist of that is. I do kind of feel like most people know what the twist is. Actually, The Village has two twists. One, that the monsters aren't real, and two, that it's the modern day and not 1897. But yeah, if you haven't seen it in a long time, I think it's really interesting to watch it without, well, like, already knowing what the twist is.
Well, it's outside the context of the time. You're not expecting a horror movie because you haven't been... hit with the advertising campaign. It's just a movie.
Yeah,
so you just watch it.
Honestly, and I felt like I watched a few other reviews from people who saw it at the time, like in the theater, like I did, and they had the same experience. They said the trailers made it look like a really scary monster movie. Essentially what they. So that's what everybody went in expecting.
Yeah,
and that's not really what it is. But I think even M. Night, like I said, at some conventions, has said that I really wish I could go back in time and redo the marketing for that. So it would more, like, accurately reflect what kind of movie it is, so people weren't expecting... Because I kind of feel like maybe that was some of the reason that people
were like,
there's, like, yeah, it wasn't really a monster movie. It was more like a love story.
False advertising hate.
Yeah, I think that's what it was. Well, you know, you can't, like, give the whole movie away, but you have to manage people's expectations, too. Yeah. It's like people don't really like... People like being surprised, but people don't want to, like, go in expecting one kind of movie and getting a totally different kind of movie.
You could take Star Wars, and if you advertise that as a movie about catching a big-ass shark, it's going to flop.
I would like to see somebody do that. That would be super funny. And like the first couple
and you
minutes,
get in there and you're like, "What the fuck is this?"
First couple of minutes, they're like on
Where's the
ocean,
shark?
Going, "Where's that shark at?" And then like it goes into space inexplicably.
Yeah.
That would be super funny. But yeah, marketing, it's important, kids. But yeah, so like I said, if you haven't seen it in a long time, go check it out again and let me know what you thought of it. Do you still love it? Do you still hate it? How do you feel about the twist? Let us know in the comments, and we will see you on the next one. Bye.